Hello and welcome to the Plant Paradigm Podcast, where we have inspiring conversations with amazing individuals from all around the world and look for ways to create a clean, green, and sustainable planet, us and all other beings. I'm your host, Tom Simak, an athlete and fellow plant eater who strives to optimize every living ecosystem. Passionate about looking after this beautiful floating rock we call home and all the lovely creatures that dwell among it. This is now the second month of a beautiful new year, and I personally love getting around goals, be it fitness or otherwise. I love sticking to it because I find that it's a personal challenge, right? Something that you have to strive to do every day or month or whatever, or week, even. It doesn't really matter, but sticking to goals are vital, I think, for personal fulfillment, making sure that your happiness meter is 110%. You could say that goals are the cornerstone of today's guest's skills. Danny Taylor. Danny is a vegan figure, competitor, and champion, the co-founder of veganproteins.com and also the co-founder of plantbuilt.com, a non-profit organization who compete together to raise awareness for veganism and money for rescued animals at farm sanctuaries. She specializes in vegan figure competition prep using evidence-based approaches and many years of personal figure competition prep using evidence-based approaches and many years of personal coaching experience to help people achieve a shredded look and to be competitive on stage in natural bodybuilding competitions. We're going to be playing in her field of expertise and diving into the scene of bodybuilding when it comes to different things like body dysmorphia and health issues at large, but also comparing ourselves to others and the role of a plant-based diet in weight loss and weight gain, as well as in nutrition. I really hope you enjoy this conversation on this fresh new year with lots of upcoming guests, and I will see you guys on the other side. Danny, welcome to the Plant Paradigm Podcast. How are you going?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
I am very excited to get into today's episode. You know, it's actually funny. I was browsing through Instagram, as you do, just stalking, preparing for the episode. And I actually saw something really interesting, and I'm just going to get right into it because small talk isn't my forte. I saw a stat you posted that 67% of bodybuilders have some sort of body dysmorphia or anorexia or certain imaging issues. Do you find that that is like a shocking statistic for most people?
I personally think that statistic is on the conservative side, personally, but I don't think many people would expect that number to be so high. I would guess it's closer to like 80%, honestly, just based on my own interactions with the world. But it is really, really high. And because people don't expect that, I think when they get into like the fitness world, the fitness realm, they're kind of shocked at how quickly those disordered thoughts can kind of creep in because they weren't expecting it.
For sure. I think it's fascinating because it's not just, I think growing up, there's a lot of misconceptions about what body dysmorphia and these thoughts look like, because obviously for every individual, it looks a little bit different. And for bodybuilders, like it really does make sense because you're looking, and I'm just looking on the professional lens, right? This is your career. So you're going to be very harsh towards yourself. Is that what you think is the most common, I guess, battle that people go through? What do you think is the most common thoughts that they come across?
Yeah. So I think when you're thinking about professional bodybuilders or people who have at least made this a huge part of their life, they really do struggle with the fact that, one, they take this so seriously that, you know, to lose what they consider to be a fit look feels like failure, basically. The other thing about bodybuilding that I think people know it, but they maybe haven't heard it said out loud. The judges of a bodybuilding show do not care how fit you are. They do not care how strong you are or how athletic you are. They care about what you look like right now on that stage, the end. So, I mean, at the end of the day, bodybuilding itself as a competition really all boils down to what you look like. And it's really easy to get kind of hooked on that and lose sight of everything else. There's also the fact that when you step on stage, you are superhuman lean, like way leaner than a human is supposed to walk around at. But once you've seen yourself like that, that suddenly becomes the new yardstick that you need to hold yourself to forever, even though realistically you can't live like that. Like you have to put on a little bit of body fat just to be healthy again. But that again, it feels like failure at that point, which is really a shame and can be a really slippery slope for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that really sucks because, I mean, it kind of questions or puts into question what we believe is healthy or what we identify as what healthy looks like. And there's stories you hear time and time again of these incredibly young professional bodybuilders, like we're talking mid-30s, passing away from different heart failures and things like that because they're body is in just such a mode of stress, but also that low level of fat that you were talking about, that's actually extremely unhealthy. Like when I'm thinking, I interviewed my friend Nick Butter recently, who circumnavigated Britain at record-breaking time, and he finished it at 3% body fat. And I'm thinking that is just, like he couldn't walk for about 2 weeks because you can't sustain that level of, I guess, stress on your body. So it really puts into perspective, like, yes, they look great, but like it's fascinating that that's really not what your body should be going through to be healthy.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's where when you look at like more of the general fitness community, like just somebody who wants to get in better shape, maybe for their own health or whatever reason that they have, a lot of times those people are looking to the fitness professionals as a sort of somebody to look up to, something to emulate. And I feel like it can kind of be like navigating a landmine field because some people are great role models to look up to. They have a really healthy head on their shoulders, lots of balance. And then other people are so wrapped up in their own disordered lifestyle and body dysmorphic worldview that you can just get sucked into it so quickly because you think that's healthy. Wow, this person is the epitome of health. Look at what I want to look like that on the beach. Let me do what they do to look like that. And then, you know, boom, it's 6 months later and you're like, do I have an eating disorder? I might have an eating disorder. And it's really, really, it can be very scary. So part of what I do is literally just try to sort of warn people about potential pitfalls. And when I'm working with somebody, it's like, we're always kind of looking for red flags that could creep up because you don't want them to sneak up on you.
What are some of the red flags that you look at?
One of the big ones is like guilt around eating something that they perceive to not be perfect. You know, if somebody's grandmother goes out of their way to make them a special vegan apple pie, like you're not going to say no. Like, first of all, saying no to that would probably be problematic in the first place. But if you have a little bit of it, and then, you know, the next day you're like, oh man, I can't believe I did that. I'm going to have to work out extra hard today to work that off. Like, that would be like the beginning of, okay, well, we should probably analyze why you're thinking about it this way. Why do you feel this way about it? Because that is like an initial red flag. Another one would just be having unrealistic expectations of what you think your body should look like all the time. And unfortunately, I find some people need to kind of reach that point before they realize that, like, oh, hey, I can't walk around like this all the time. Like, it's not worth the effort and the suffering for me. So it's like, oh, cool, we reached this place where I have abs, but maybe I don't need to have abs all the time if it means I can't have a social life at all anymore. So those are some of the things we look for.
Yeah, I find that really fascinating because, I mean, let's use you as an example. How long have you been working out?
About 16 years, actually, right. 16, 17 years. Yeah.
Yep. So I'm going to be someone who's maybe a female looking up to you. I find your Instagram page and I see your body. And I'm like, oh man, you know, she's got good arms. She's got the abs. Like, shit, I've been going to gym one day a week for 2 months. Why don't I look like that? And then that is just this extreme. It's like comparing your chapter one, someone else's chapter 20, that whole lifestyle. But what would you say to someone who is kind of, how would you develop the mentality of don't compare yourself to other people?
Well, one of the things that I like to do is I do like to show people my own sort of photos along the way. I'm really lucky that I did take a lot of photos from like day one. And you know, it's not like you just said, I didn't start working out and suddenly just like look like $1 million in 3 months. Like this was super, super gradual. And showing people things like that and showing people what realistic progress looks like for people. And yes, some people are going to progress faster than others. That's just the way that it goes. But allowing people to see what's normal, reminding people that social media is a highlight reel and, you know, the outliers tend to kind of make it to the top before the more average people. And the fact is most people are going to fall into the sort of average category, which is fine and great. And, you know, I think when people have more realistic expectations, they're less likely to quit. Like when you understand like, oh, I guess I am actually making pretty good progress, then you can keep at it for years and years and years instead of just like, oh, well, it's been 3 months, not where I wanted to be, I quit.
Yeah, I love that mentality. And I love actually taking that to all of life because that is all encompassing. Like, let's say, like we both obviously eat plant exclusive diets. And so if I go and start on this journey and I watch like a documentary, I'm like, oh man, I really want to start eating more plants. And then I start having plants. I'm like, oh man, I accidentally had meat. And then I give up on everything because I had that one mistake. It's no, you have to always be making progress and you're not going to be perfect. No one has ever been perfect from the get-go.
Yeah. And I use the analogy with my clients. It's sort of like getting a flat tire on your car and then going around and slashing the other three because you're mad about it.
Oh, that's
like
it really
doesn't make sense, but we all have done it at some point. Like been like, oh, well, I made a little misstep. Guess I'm going to quit forever. And yeah, that's once I give them that analogy, they're usually like, oh yeah, I am doing that.
Wow. It's so real. I feel the same way when you have too much work on your plate. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to play some games on my phone then because like there's just no chance yet. It's actually really funny. I haven't ever seen the paper that actually found that 67% of bodybuilders going back to the beginning had some sort of body dysmorphic challenges. But I did read a paper, which was really interesting, in the Human Journal of Kinetics, I believe it's called. And they looked at 272 participants. And these people were between the ages of 17 and 57. And an average of them trained, I think it was 6.8 years of training. And they found that 37% of their bodybuilders, all male, and 20% of runners had certain challenges to like anorexia, bulimia, body image issues. And what's really fascinating, even though it's a lower statistic than 67%, it's definitely significant because these are people who have been training for over 6 years. Like this isn't your everyday Joe. This is someone who is almost getting a lot of experience and still has those issues. So I find it fascinating that if you don't nip this in the bud, it can just continue growing.
Yeah, it really, really can. And I think, you know, when we look at really long-term athletes or really kind of extreme athletes, the elite level athletes, which maybe this study wasn't just elite level athletes, but when we look at people who have been like bodybuilding for 10 or 20 years, I put them kind of close to the top, even if they're not all Arnold Schwarzenegger. But when we look at those kind of extremes, it's almost like they are willing to sacrifice a little bit of their sanity for their sport at that point. And like you just mentioned, all of the, you know, bodybuilders in their 20s and 30s who are like dropping dead, which this year has been the worst I've ever seen for bodybuilders dying.
I agree.
It's been crazy. And, you know, my heart breaks. I could talk about that all day. My heart breaks for the situation, but you know, a lot of these people knew what they were doing. Like they, you know, when they decided to like take these certain performance enhancing drugs, et cetera, they knew the risks. They made that choice. They decided to risk that because they loved their sport so much. And to a much lesser degree, I think just really, really fit people. They are willing to make certain sacrifices in their life that maybe like a clinician would call disordered for their love of their sport. And like, is it good? Is it bad? You know, that's it. It's up to everybody to make their own decisions. But I just wish that more people were aware of it while it was happening. Because what I see is people kind of slide down this path and they don't realize it till it's already happened. Mm-hmm. And looking back, they're like, wow, where did I step off the path here? But then it's much harder to make a comeback from that.
Definitely. I mean, I don't, at the risk of sounding like a broken record to those who listen to this show regularly, sustainability is a, it's a, It's a topic that surrounds all of life, and workouts definitely and fitness definitely fall in one of those categories, which is why I really wanted to talk about that today. We want to make sure what we're doing in everyday life to achieve happiness and health and all these different stems of what make us grateful and happy to be alive, we need to make sure everything is sustainable. And it's just not when we have these unrealistic expectations. And I get it. Like, I enjoy my favorite sport of all time is running. Now, I'm aware that on any one given time, according to so many studies, it's ridiculous. In a year, 95% of runners will incur an injury that is either minor or major. Now, what that says to me is runners are doing something wrong. They're not stretching, they're running with incorrect form and things like this. But I also get that weight loss and the body image thing, because I mean, I'm not super skinny or anything like that, but when you look at athletes, to a very marginal degree, those professional athletes, yes, if you get lighter, you're going to be a bit faster. That's right. Just a fact of the matter. Now, if you're not a professional Olympic grade runner, should you be worried about that? I'd probably argue no. So it's strange how, like, you know, the average person, say in your world, isn't like a professional looking at going at the world stage or an Olympic level things, but we still have that expectation of ourselves, which is really strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I have noticed that when I work with endurance athletes, whether they're runners or cyclists, they are less concerned with what they look like. But I have met a lot who are very concerned with the actual number on the scale for that very reason. You'll go a little bit faster if you have a couple fewer pounds on you. And I guess that makes sense up to a point, until you reach that point where it's like, you're killing yourself to drop a couple more pounds. And for what? At that point, you're just going to be more tired, more fatigued. You're not actually going to go faster, because now you're just depleted, you know? So yeah, I think every sport kind of has its potential pitfalls, and just being aware of that when you get into it, I think can really kind of set somebody up to have a more successful fitness career long-term, because that's the goal, right? Sustainability, like you just said, we want to do this until we literally can't anymore. And yeah. Getting it right the first time really helps with that.
Absolutely. And how long, out of curiosity, Danny, have you been on a plant-based diet?
This is my 20th year.
Oh my God. So you're getting to those Robert Sheik numbers. So that's ages.
I think his 25th anniversary.
Yeah, something like that.
Was a couple days ago. Yeah.
Crazy, man.
So he's in his 25th year and now I'm in my 20th year. So it is really, really crazy to think about. But yeah, you can be vegan forever. And
you can not die.
Yeah.
What I find fascinating about muscle growth and synthesis, like in your kind of neck of the woods, is and this is a really unpopular opinion for vegans maybe, but I think, looking at studies, muscle growth, whether you eat meat or not, is actually the same. So, but I think where plant-based actually gets an edge, which isn't so much talked about, is actually you can recover better. And so if you can recover better, you can work out more. So even though eating meat or not, your growth potential is the same, but your recovery is actually different.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's the number one. I mean, like I said, I've been vegan for so long now that I was vegan before I was an athlete. So I don't have anything to compare it to in terms of athletics personally. But just recovery in general seems to get so much better for people when they adopt a plant-based diet, that I do think that is the edge. And I also think the other edge is people that are building muscle as vegans feel like they have something to prove. So they just have like a little bit of extra motivation. I see it across the board. They're like, yeah, I'm going to show them what vegans can do. And it's like, you just don't see that in people that aren't plant-based. So, hey, we'll take the edges wherever we can get them.
Oh, for sure. In terms of nutrition as well, since we're on the kind of topic, do you have like a certain macro spread that you stick to, like protein, carbs, fat, or certain calories a day or anything like that?
So for me personally, it varies a lot depending on what my current goal is. But I will say this, I don't like percentage-based macro splits. So when people say like, oh, I do 40-30-30, to me, that doesn't really make sense, because how many calories are you eating is going to completely change what those numbers actually are. For example, for a long time, like, you know, 80, 10, 10 was really big for a long time, especially down under, I believe. It was really big there. And, you know, we'd hear these like endurance athletes who were eating 6,000-7,000 calories a day saying, well, I only get 10% of my protein from plants. But when you actually calculated that out, it was close to 100 grams. And then like, that's a good amount of protein, right? 100 grams, that's pretty good for somebody claiming to eat no protein. But then when you would take a woman who maybe needed to eat 1,400 calories or so to get where they wanted to go, and then they're eating like, you know, less than 20 grams of protein a day. So I just don't like percentage-based splits. So I like people to, you know, figure out their caloric needs, whatever it is they're going for. Like if I'm trying to build muscle, I'm going to eat in a caloric surplus. If I'm trying to lose body fat, I'm going to eat in a caloric deficit. But my protein stays about the same no matter what I'm doing. And it's just based on my body weight and the amount of muscle that I carry personally. So it's about 120 to 140 grams for me and anytime during the year. And then my calories can vary wildly. They can end up at like 1500 or they can be up to almost 3000, but the protein stays the same. So it's just like the sources of food that I use vary. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess it does. I'd love to go through how you would actually work out what you need, like to my understanding, and maybe you have a different view, but I'd say the kind of minimum we want to be hitting at for someone who's an everyday person, just to kind of achieve that level of health, even if you just maybe work out a few days a week or love going on your long walks, whatever that looks like for you. For me, I would kind of start working out, okay, I think it's 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. That's what I would kind of look at. Do you have a different number for that or different numbers to look at the fat and carbs you should be having at a minimum?
So I'll start with the protein because that's a good question. And what you just said, and you're going to have to forgive me because we use pounds here. So I'm just going to do a 2-to-1, even though I know it's not exact. To survive, like to just be a healthy functioning person, that number that you just said, 0.8 grams per kilogram, that will totally work. Nobody's going to end up in the protein deficiency ward that doesn't exist in a hospital, by the way, eating that amount of protein. But because of the demographic that I work with, more specifically, like the people who come to me, they're already vegan. They want to build muscle. That's what they want to do. So they don't just want to like be walking around healthy. They are actively trying to build muscle. So we actually use, it varies a little bit, anywhere from 0.8 to 1.2 grams of protein per pound of lean body mass. So however much muscle you have, that would be 0.8 to 1.2 grams per pound. So that's how I come out with that 120 to 130-ish gram for myself. And it varies so much for everybody. But calories, that varies even more. Like that varies way, way more because...
How do you work that out?
Just as like a super, super, super basic equation, just to get a ballpark, like 14 or 15 calories per pound of your body weight. Just as a like, okay, this is probably what I need just to maintain where I'm at. And then you kind of scale up or down from there. That said, I would say there's probably 10% of people on either side that just have insane metabolisms, either insanely fast or insanely slow. And that like basic calculation is not going to work for them. So when I work with somebody, I ask them what they're eating. I get an idea what they're already eating. And then I kind of base it on that and watch what happens and tick things up or down. And that usually takes probably 2 to 3 weeks just to make sure like, okay, we got it. We're in the right place to do what we need to do. And I just find that to be so much better than just trying to plug people into a calculator because, you know, it's a good place to start, but most of the time it's not where you're going to end up.
Yeah. I mean, on the topic of calories, I was actually browsing YouTube as well. And I saw a video that I've probably ranted about multiple times on this show, and that's the 1200 calorie diet. And I know a lot more females have probably heard of this more so than males, given that I find anecdotally a lot more females want to be losing weight than males. Males are all about protein and muscles and that kind of stuff. So I want, for those who haven't heard of the 1,200 calorie diet, I want you to just give a debrief of pretty much what that is or where it comes from and your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So it is, is that a number that you hear like pretty frequently where you live also?
When I was younger, yeah.
That's so wild. It's so wild how widespread that is. Yeah. Here, every single woman that I have ever spoken to has told me that they have at least tried to eat 1200 calories. And I was just so curious. I wanted to know where this number came from. And now I'm not going to remember the author's name, but this woman wrote a diet book, really the first diet book I would say that was ever written. And it became wildly popular. She was the first person to really talk about calories and to sort of quantify calories of food. This predates food labels. And it's interesting, I read the book and she was actually right about a lot of stuff, which is pretty impressive given where the science was at that point. But also from reading it, I could tell this woman had a struggle with binge eating. She had struggles with body image, and the kind of posh thing of the time was for women to be really, really slim. So she actually put a cap on what she suggested that women eat. She did have the caveat that you might need more than this. Like, it was in there, but you know, people heard 1200 calories. And then she had sample diets in there of how to do it. And those became super popular in newspapers and magazines of the time. And it has just gone on and on and on. And the other thing that perpetuates this myth today, I believe, is if you download a nutrition tracking app like MyFitnessPal, and you go to set it up and it says, how old are you? How much do you weigh? And then the big one, what is your goal? Oh, well, I want to lose weight. So you select that and it says, it literally will say, how much, like how quickly do you want to lose the weight? Slow, average, or fast? Well, everyone picks fast and it'll take whatever it calculated your maintenance to be and it will subtract 1,000 calories. Now, if you're a woman and you're on the smallish side, it's going to subtract 1,000 calories, but it has set the program to go no lower than 1,200. So if your maintenance was 1,800, now it's subtracted 1,000, it's going to cap you at 1,200. So it seems like so many women, like a huge percentage of women, have done this setup, and MyFitnessPal has told them to eat 1,200 calories to reach their goal. So now you have a whole new generation of women who also think they need to eat 1200 calories to reach their goal. And it's just like the myth that will not die. And it is not gonna, I mean, that is not enough food for the vast majority of people, even if their goal is weight loss.
I mean, I haven't looked into it too much, but I wonder, I mean, I'm sure there's so many papers on the actual effectiveness of this compared to someone who's say eating 1500 calories or say compared to someone who's eating 1800, but has the energy to go for a walk. And I wonder what actually gets the most results. But what's so frustrating about this, and I remember the actual rant I had on the show, I was interviewing Alex Glover and he's like, well, here's the problem with that. Toddlers to grow need 1400 calories. So you're telling me this grown ass human needs less calories than a toddler. And I heard that and I'm like, that's a really good point, because there's no chance in any universe that you should be eating less than a baby.
Right. Yeah. And I have seen that with my own niece and nephew. Like, they definitely do eat more than some of the women that I know. Unfortunately, it's very sad. If this is important, if somebody can eat 1200 calories a day successfully, they are going to lose weight. Like, there's no question. Physics, they have to. The two questions are, can you actually do that? Most of the time, no. You might be able to do it for 2 or 3 or 4 days successfully, and then you are so hungry and so ravenous that you end up binging and closing up any caloric deficit that you had just created. And then on top of that, you have all this guilt and shame for failing, and you're like, tomorrow I'm going to start and it's going to be better. And this cycle just repeats and repeats and repeats. The other option is, like, you reach your goal weight. Now what? Now what do you do? Plan on eating 1200 calories forever? Not likely. And then as soon as you start to eat quote unquote normal again, you're just going to gain it all back because you haven't actually learned any sustainable methods. You just learned how to starve yourself properly for a couple of months. And then that's a whole new cycle that goes on that like spans years of like these binge and restrict phases of your life that, you know, we talk about it like yo-yo dieting, but that is what it is. And it's a very common problem.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we're recording this just prior to 2022 beginning, and it will be released at the near the beginning of 2022. And a lot of people, you know, you've got 2 more weeks from today and we've got New Year's resolutions hitting the ball. Everyone's joining the gyms. Everyone's saying, I want to walk more. I want to do this more and see my family more, whatever that is for you. You know, being 2 weeks out, when do you think is a good time, out of curiosity, you think, to set goals?
I think now, actually, like just start, you know, you don't have to like set them and start them today. But I mean, I think like if you're a New Year's resolution person, which I know they get a bad rap, but I actually kind of like New Year's resolutions. I like anything that is going to inspire, like fill people with motivation to do something good for themselves. I'm totally here for it. So like I've already started to think about what are the categories of my life that I want to work on and where can I find more balance, like you mentioned earlier. But really like whenever that motivation strikes to start analyzing like where you're at and where you want to be and what is that gap and how do you close it? So it doesn't, I mean, if this is going to come out after the new year, so it doesn't, it's not like, oh, if you miss January, you got to wait till next January. Like you can start to do goal setting at any time.
Yeah, you just need a Monday or the start of a month or whatever that looks like for you to get the motivation to kind of continue. But I mean, setting goals can be literally ambitious. It could be something small. It could be anything. So I was wondering if you have like a lot of people in this category. I mean, people that listen to this podcast, we generally really care about climate change, being sustainable, being eco-friendly, eating more plants, things like this. And then a lot of that, we can't help the planet. Let's be frank. We can't help the planet. We can't help animals. We can't help our friends and family if we can't help ourselves. And so that's why I put a lot of stress on being healthy, whether that is just a walk a day, whether that's exercising a few times a week. You don't have to do like Danny does and smash the gym every day or whatever your workout regime is. You don't have to do me and run your half marathons and marathons. That's not important. What is just being the healthiest version of what you would like to be. So I was wondering if you have like a, almost, I want to word it weirdly and say like a minimum standard of what we should be doing or what goals we should be thinking about to make sure we're equipped to have a great year.
I do, actually.
I love that.
You wanted to word it kind of funny, but I do. I have things that even myself, you know, like if things get really crazy for me and, you know, I can't go to the gym 5 days that week or I can't track my food to the gram, like there are still things that I need to make sure that I'm doing every day for my physical health and for my mental health. Because if you lose the mental health, like everything's gone, right? So I think they're both equally as important. So, okay, where do we start? One, sleep. You have to make sure you're getting the best sleep that you can. Try to look around at your sleep hygiene. Like, are you sleeping with screens? Are you going to bed and waking up at a different time every day? Like try to kind of get that on track and lots of things are going to get better from you right from there. So sleep is one, hydration is two. Make sure that you're drinking enough water for you. For me, I have to drink 3 liters of water a day minimum, like even on a bad day, that's what I'm going to try to do. Vegetables. Always want to make sure that I'm getting vegetables in at least 2 of my meals every day, no matter what. Even if the rest of the meal is junk, I'm going to make sure that I'm getting vegetables in twice a day. And move your body, preferably outside. And that's it. Like, it doesn't have to be running. Like, I live for going for a walk every day outside. It's winter here. It's absolutely freezing. Still get outside every single day, even if it's just for 10 minutes. And if you can't get outside, if it's a storm or it's nasty outside, move your body indoors, stretch, do yoga, put on music and just dance around. Like our bodies were made to move. Doesn't have to be weightlifting. So if you can do those, I think that was 4 things, sleep, water, vegetables, move your body. If you can do those four things every day, you are already miles ahead of most people and you're going to feel so much better. So that's my minimum standard every day.
I love those standards. Definitely something I like to do every single day. I mean, coming across, since this will be released in the new year, I was wondering if you have certain metrics that you like to track as well when people are starting to set these goals. So I know for a lot of people, myself and my partner included, we love those 8-week challenges, 12-week challenges, mm-hmm. you know, the 21-day whatever thing. Do you, when you're looking at doing this, people usually set like for the whole year, I'll be doing this, but you know, one marathon starts with one step. And so I think it's beginning A, with the end in mind, but also making sure you make those little steps. When we're looking at, say, setting a, let's say, weight loss goal, so a lot of people want to do your weight loss goals in the New Year's. Are there certain metrics you would track beyond the number that you get on the scale?
Ooh, so if someone's, I always make whatever we're tracking really specific to the goal. So if someone's goal is, I want to lose 50 pounds, for example, then we are going to pay attention to the number on the scale, but we're going to make it realistic. I want to lose 50 pounds this year. Okay, what does that break down to? That's 25 pounds 6 months from now. That's, what is that, like 4 pounds a month? That's just over a pound a week, which is around a half a kilo, I believe. So that's like a reasonable amount. And if you're keeping track of that, you know, you could see if you're on track. It's not going to be November and suddenly you're scrambling to lose 30 pounds, you know? But if someone has other goals, like I just want to be healthier, that's a great goal, but it is kind of blurry. What does that mean to you? Like you really do need to define what that means to you. Write those things down. So I like to take the big goals that you make on January 1st. I want to save this much money. I want to spend more time with my grandfather. Okay, how much time do you want to spend with your grandfather? Do you want to see him once a week? Do you want to talk to him on the phone a couple times a month? Write it down every month. Like, okay, I want to make sure I call my grandfather 3 times this month. Check it off as you go. And then at the end of the month, you can look at all your goals and see how you did. And like, don't beat yourself up if you don't hit all of them every month. You probably won't. But as long as you're checking every month, then you can try to make next month better. So I take the big goal, I divide it up into 12 months, I divide that up into the 4 weeks, and then kind of go from there so that it's like little bite-sized pieces. It's the only way that I can reach a goal is in little bite-sized pieces. So that's what I like to do for other people too.
Definitely. And it makes it a lot less daunting as well. Like if you see 50 pounds in 1 year, you're just like, 50 pounds? That is like a freaking 8-year-old kid I have to lose.
Yeah.
So breaking it down is just mentally, it's just going to be so much better. But like you said, we're going to fail. Every one of us does. And that's okay. And that's totally okay. But I was wondering if you have any advice. So people, I guess, like what do you think really deters people from achieving their goals?
There's a lot of things that I think can deter people. Sometimes I think people just, for whatever reason, they don't think they deserve to reach their goal. So they sort of sabotage themselves halfway there. That's a really big, big topic that I couldn't speak to a whole lot more than that, other than I see it a lot. But I do think environment plays a huge, huge, huge role in deterring people from reaching their goals. You can want something really, really badly and have the best laid plans. But if your buddy is showing up with a 6-pack of beer 3 nights a week, it's going to be way harder to, you know, stick to your goal of drinking less this year, for example. So the physical surroundings, the people you surround yourself with, the media that you surround yourself with, and you know what that does to your job, like all of these things in your environment can really pull you from your goals. So I think when you're making your goals, you have to really consider like, okay, what are likely to be the roadblocks we run into here? And what's going to be my plan when that happens? A lot of times just talking to people before you even start is helpful. Like letting people know, hey, I have this big goal. This is what I'm going to be trying to do. So if I like turn you down a few times, like don't take it personally. I have to do this for me. That helps. Most people in your life are going to be supportive of those things. And if they're not, they're probably not the type of people that you want in your life a whole lot anyway. So it's one way to weed people out.
Yeah, of course. You don't have time for that. I think what you touched on is actually really, really important, especially with media. like the majority of people spend 2 to 3 hours or more on their phone every single day. And a lot of that's going to be your TikTok, your Instagram, I guess still Facebook's a thing. And when we're looking at those pages, that also very much reflects your environment. Who are you following? Are you following people who are just talking about doom and gloom and hating their lives and partying every weekend because they're avoiding their responsibilities in real life? Or this year, say you want to get more educated and more active in the political scene in your county or your council or whatever your jurisdiction, follow the council. Follow certain climate change educational pages. Follow people who motivate you. Say you want more fitness-related content. Follow Danny. Follow these people that kind of would speak to what you want, and then they can be like your virtual friends that are like the average of five you hang around with, and that helps you stay true to your goal. Because say you're deterring, I don't want to work out, I don't have the motivation right now, I'm just going to open up Instagram. Oh crap, I just saw Danny's post about working out. Okay, fine, I'll get up my ass and I'll go do it. And I think that is such a big leverage to you for us, and an opportunity for us to use social media as a tool for positivity for ourselves.
Yeah, I totally 100% agree. On a personal level, the internet as a whole has been a really dark place for me this past year. And I've had to remind myself, like, no, there's so much good on there too. There's good people. I met Robert on the internet 14 years ago. I met my husband on the internet 14 years ago. But if you're not careful, the dark, bad, almost like toxic, it's like junk food for your brain, just kind of seeps in. So like, inventory that and get rid of the stuff that is making you feel terrible. But you need the awareness to even notice it's making you feel terrible first. So I'm really glad you mentioned that.
I mean, you brought up junk food. That's a really important point. That's something that really screws up with people, because you have, like we were talking about at the beginning, like you have this one slip up and then all of a sudden you're like the Antichrist or whatever you pin yourself as. What is your take on cheat meals and how you use them, if you even do?
So I really, really work hard to not talk about food as good or bad. Because I think once you start thinking about food as good or bad, then suddenly you become good or bad when you eat it. And it just leads to all these weird, guilty, shamey feelings. So I've worked really hard to get away from that myself. And I work hard to get my clients away from that too. So we don't do cheat meals, using quotes there. We do sometimes do free meals or untracked meals, where they can go out to a restaurant and like almost practice eating something that isn't part of their plan, because nobody can be on a meal plan or a macro plan for the rest of their life. So you need to learn how to eat in like a reasonable way outside of the constructs of what's on my meal plan right now. Like, how do you go to a restaurant and have a piece of pizza instead of an entire pizza? Like, that takes practice for a lot of people. So I do think that it's important to keep that stuff in occasionally. Because like one day you're going to be at a party and there's going to be a big bowl of chips. There's no way to avoid it. Like, how do you act around that? Well, if you never allow yourself to be in that situation, you're not going to know until you're at a work party making a fool out of yourself, stuffing chips down your throat because you can't help it. So I think, like, just like anything else, we kind of have to practice our willpower and our discipline in those situations, and not in an all or nothing kind of way. Like, you want to be in a place where you can have a cookie and not feel like you have to eat the whole package of them and not feel bad about it and just move on with your life. Because I think all of the like, oh, well, I had one, so then I ate the whole package and then I felt the crap the next day. And then I started saying all these mean things to myself. And then I punished myself on the treadmill for 2 hours. Like, whoa, you could have just had a cookie and like carried on with your life and it would have been okay. So, you know, I don't think people should make I don't say good or bad, but I will say more or less nutritious foods. I think that's a better way to look at it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want people to make like less nutritious foods a huge part of their life. That should not be the bulk of your diet. But it shouldn't feel like you just committed the cardinal sin anytime you have something like that. it should kind of just be a bit neutral about the situation. Or even if like maybe you did have a little bit more than you intended to have, look at it and be like, huh, that didn't go exactly the way that I would have liked it to go. What can I do in the future to make this situation better? So it's a, there's a lot of nuance when it comes to like junk food, I think.
Yeah. And that's the key. It's like, what can I do to make this situation better? And having that positive outlook, it's, you know, finding what works for you. What we're saying is definitely not going to work for 100% of the population. And a really good example of this is, say, there needs to be reminders in your life on what goals you're doing. So whether that's what you mentioned of tracking them monthly, that could be, say you're focusing on weight loss, you have a screensaver on your phone or a wallpaper that speaks to you. So whether it's you working out or a number, as long as it's not an obsessive kind of behavior, there's always a line that you don't need to cross. Mm-hmm. So that could be that, whether it's something that you write on your mirror in the bathroom or with a sticky note, or whether that's something you journal every day, whatever that looks like to you. Or we haven't even touched on accountability partners. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Accountability partners. I think it's a huge part of being successful. I joke that like 80% of my job is just accountability. Like it's just that my clients have somebody that they kind of have to report to. So they want to report good things. And, you know, that's a huge, huge part of my job. And I think that that accountability, not a coach necessarily, but accountability is the difference between success or failure, because you can have the perfect, perfect plan on paper. But if you don't have any accountability, you have no reason, like there's just not a lot of motivation to do it. Once you have to tell somebody how you did, that's when you start to see results, because nobody likes to let somebody else down. And it works both ways. If it's like a gym buddy, you don't want to not show up for your buddy. They don't want to not show up for you. So accountability partners are really important.
Yeah. Do you have, I mean, accountability is great, but then I noticed we haven't even talked a lot about the plant-based diet on this episode, which is what we do love talking about, plants. Plants are amazing. Do you have mm-hmm. like particular, I don't even know how to word this question. I'm almost going to go with like meals or foods that you like to add into your day or your week that is just a non-negotiable. You would eat these few foods to make sure that you're always on track nutritionally, energy-wise, etc.
Yeah. So I think for me, it's more like I am a huge creature of habit. So I just eat the same things over and over again because I'm like a robot like that. So I love oatmeal. I always have oatmeal. Like, it changes what's in it and the way that I prepare it changes all the time, but like there's always oatmeal. I would say like my favorite protein sources are tofu, like extra firm tofu, and tempeh, which I make myself, which is just made out of vital wheat gluten. I like them both because they're, you know, high protein. They're relatively like unprocessed foods. They're pretty low waste foods around here. So I love those. I have them all the time. And broccoli, like I eat so much broccoli, it's not even funny. Sometimes we have to like, okay, we
do
have
you
to
like the taste veggies. Of broccoli?
Oh my gosh, I love it so much.
Oh my god. I've never met someone like you.
Yeah, I love it, like with a little bit of salt and some nutritional yeast on it. Like it's my favorite vegetable, to the point like if Giacomo gets other vegetables, I'll be like, why didn't you just get more broccoli? He's like, man, you need to eat something else. I'm like, okay, fine. We'll eat something else.
That's funny.
So yeah, I do eat a lot of greens. Everything else kind of changes. I go through phases like where I'm like, oh man, I love kamut this month. And I'll eat like tons of kamut. And then next month I'll be like, oh, I don't want to see kamut again for another like 6 months. And then I'll just eat sweet potatoes for 2 months. And then I'll be like, no more sweet potatoes. So over the year, I get a lot of variety, but like day to day, not a ton of variety for me. My husband says I eat like a toddler because I eat the same things over and over again.
As long as you get more than that 1400 calories, that's all that matters.
Oh, you better believe. Definitely getting more than 1400 calories.
Do you have like coming into the new year, do you have any like unpopular beliefs or myths that you think people should leave behind in 2021?
Oh man, you know, I did a whole podcast on exactly this last year and I didn't think about any for this year. Stuff to leave behind in 2020. You know, this is I don't know if this is an unpopular belief, but I think a lot of us kind of adopted it in 2020 and 20, like carried over into 2021, just this feeling of like helplessness, like everything in the world is happening and there's nothing we can do about it. And that really led a lot of people to feel really down and really alone and almost like, what's the point? Like, what's the point of even trying this anymore? Like, look around, it's been really bad. That's all true. But, you know, you actually do control a good amount of your own immediate world. You have a lot more control over things than maybe you think that you do. And I think we kind of forgot that a little bit over the last year and a half or so. So that is something that I'm going to be working on. I know a lot of my clients feel the same way, that in 2021, they're going to kind of start to take back the ownership of various parts of their lives and, you know, start to feel a little bit more like they're in the driver's seat of their own life again, because, you know, we are, we might not be able to, like, you know, save the ocean or anything ourselves, but we can certainly make our own little worlds better for us.
Mm, I love sticking to your circle of influence. It's the way that we get away with being happy all the time. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's almost, to a certain degree, ignorance is bliss, but also like, if you'll find the blissfulness in your circle of influence, it's like, why mm-hmm. why should I be stressing about what Donald Trump is thinking about right now? Well, I can't change that.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you said it much better than the way I said it. I'm going to adopt that from now on.
please. Look, coming towards the end of the episode, which flew, what I love to leave people with an opportunity to really speak their minds. And this comes in the form of Danny's words of wisdom. That's what we'll call this little segment. And this could be something related to what we talked about today, or it could be something that's been on your mind over the past few months or coming into the new year with some reflective, whatever that is for you. But I'd love for you to just have the platform for a bit to just give our audience a bit of wisdom.
All right. So if I could give a bit of wisdom based on the kind of vibes that I've been feeling from a lot of people lately, it would just be to be kinder to yourself. Like, I think that is the number one thing that a lot of people could do to improve their own lives, is just, we don't pay attention to how much we are talking badly about ourselves in our head, like all day long. And if you're not paying attention to it, it's going to creep in and it's just going to start to become your story. So start to pay attention to the things that you're saying to yourself in your own head and work on it. Try to not say nasty things about yourself. And if you catch yourself, say, hey, that's not true. Here's some things that are true about myself that are good. And if you do that over and over and over and over again, then that can start to become your story instead. And it'll really help to change like the lens in which you view your world.
That's really, really powerful. And self-love is definitely something I think everyone should have on the goal list for 2022 and beyond. Every year is actually, that's the goal. And I like to phrase it another way as well, with imagine you're a parent and you know, kids pick up everything, right? And you started talking negatively about yourself, like, if you're a mom, I don't suit this dress because I'm too fat, or I'm not beautiful because I look like this. If you're a guy, like, oh, I've got this flubber walking around. And all of a sudden you walk into your kid's room one day and you see them kind of talking and they're like, oh, you know, I'm so ugly. I don't suit this school uniform. Everything looks bad on me. And as a parent, you're just like, why would you say that? You're the most beautiful thing that I've brought into existence. And it's like, no, that kid's just reflecting what you tell yourself. And so the moral of the story is, people pick up on how you speak to yourself. And if you're a parent, that's incredibly important. But if not, how you speak to yourself, really, it's you're torturing your inner child, because there is this beautiful little person that you are. And why would you speak bad about that? There's no reason for you to do that.
I totally agree with you. And that's a tactic I use too. Like, imagine saying it to yourself as a little kid, like picture yourself, little kid, like they're right in front of you. Would you ever say that to them? No, of course you wouldn't. So why are you saying it to yourself? So yeah, that's great.
I would love to, so where can we find you? So if someone wanted to reach out to you, Danny, where's the best place we can go?
So the best place to find me is veganproteins.com. So that's where you can find anything about our various levels of coaching. We have recipes and stuff like that there. We also have YouTube and Instagram, Vegan Proteins. We have a podcast called Muscles by Brussels Radio. And we also work with Vegan Strong, Team Vegan Strong. So veganstrong.com has tons of recipes, workouts, articles. It's like a full vegan athlete resource center. And that is all completely free. So definitely check out veganstrong.com too.
Awesome. That all sounds amazing. And I just wanted to finish up with a thank you. Obviously, thank you, Danny, for coming on and sharing your wisdom and playing in part of this conversation. That's incredibly powerful, especially for people coming into the new year, to help us all achieve better things so we can be happier. And then in turn, our glass is full so we can help the environment, we can help the animals, we can help our friends and family. That's incredibly, incredibly important. And I thank you again as your kind of role as being a coach. And I have no idea about any of the people that you coach, but I can speak from anecdotal experiences. You play a very important part. And from this conversation, I gather that you're incredibly passionate and empathetic to these people. And I appreciate that existence in our world, because like we said, people are incredibly critical of themselves. So I'm grateful that there's people like you out there that see through that and really call people out, because you can see it and not do anything. But if you see it and call someone out, that's incredibly impactful. And what that really means on the grand scheme of things to me is, if this person is fitter and healthier, they again will be like, plants have this opportunity, we should all go plant-based, we should help this. And then so it's this beautiful circle of help. So in you coaching, more people eat more plants, less environment deforestation, more powerful conversations like this. And so, you know, I thank you for all of that. It's an incredibly important role you play. And I hope that you crush all your 2022 goals.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really awesome. And I just really appreciate being here. And this was a great conversation. So thank you.
Hi there. Welcome to the end of the episode. I really hope you enjoyed this chat between Danny and I. Thank you, Danny, once again for coming on and sharing this incredible conversation. I hope that it is incredibly relevant for a lot of you to help strive to, I guess, stay consistent with goals and making sure that you are fulfilled and happy and all those things. If you want to connect with Danny, I've left all the links in the show notes below. And I will see you guys on next week's episode. Stay happy, eat plants, peace.